Good morning. This is a class that we all need, for one, and it's effective discipline. And no matter how many years you may have taught, if you want to prevent discipline, you need to have good classroom management. And that was a class that was yesterday. How many of you were not there yesterday? Okay, so it will be some of a repeat of that. I didn't want to touch too much on it, but they intertwine so much that you can't have one without the other. So we want to look at what is discipline, first of all. And according to the Oxford Dictionary, discipline is the practice of training people, or students, to obey rules or a code of behavior using punishment to correct disobedience. We don't want to just talk about discipline, but we want to talk about effective discipline. There is a difference, actually a very big difference. Effective is, as the dictionary says, successful in producing a desired or intended result. And what we want to achieve as in Christian classrooms is a change of heart. And to eventually, we're the lower grades, and so we have a big opportunity for later in life, for them to, if we've taught them properly, for them to come to Christ. So first of all, we want to look at why students may misbehave and why we need to discipline. Students may misbehave, especially in the younger grades, they're just excited. They might be excited for school, excited for their friends to be there, excited to have you as their teacher. That was always great. It might be to get attention. The attention I'm talking about, though, as far as misbehaving, would be not to give the teacher an apple or they want to give the teacher flowers. It would be the inappropriate attention seeking, either from the teacher or from other students. They might misbehave because they feel like they're not in control. And that could come from their home situation where everything might be out of control. And children feel like there's not control, they want something they can control, whether it is your actions, if you let them control that, or the actions of the other students. They might misbehave to test you. How far can they push you? How far can they? Will you let them go to you? They see a reaction from you. It might be because they're impulsive. That is a big one too. In that, especially for the younger students, I think they. I had one just before I was going to teach them, and I was talking to the parent, and they just came up and kicked me. Like, okay, I didn't say anything. And they were going to do it again. The parent stopped them, obviously. But I think that child today is still impulsive. You know, mother just told me recently that, if any child's going to fall in the pond, it's going to be him, because he's just impulsive. And so there's a lot of children out there like that. They're just impulsive until they learn to rein it in, have their own self-discipline. It might be from a lack of knowledge. They don't understand a concept that you've taught. It could have been on your part, you weren't clear. It could have been on their part, they weren't listening or paying attention. It could be because of misbehavior from their home environment or a lack of early childhood development. And it could be some of you might work with adopted children or children in foster care or children from broken homes. It could be misbehaving because of peer pressure. They want to be look good to their peers. It could be also be learning disabilities. You know, there's so many out there: ADD, ADHD, dyslexia, auditory processing disorder, and that one especially is one that goes underdiagnosed because they don't think about that. They think about, oh, maybe it's dyslexia, maybe it's ADD, but what they hear. Doesn't come out as how they have heard it. It could be physical influences, such as a lack of sleep or even breakfast. I've asked my students, so what'd you have for breakfast? And she said, 2 cookies. I don't think that's a very proper breakfast for someone that's going to be using their brain for half the day. So, and there's many more reasons why, but we as teachers, if we can figure out why, that can help us in our discipline. Sometimes we don't even know why, and some of them, children don't even have control over why, like the learning disabilities. They don't have control of that. That's not their fault. But the child just needs someone to be there for them, to help them on their way, and feel that even when maybe no one else is, and that's our teacher's role. So why do we need to discipline? Well, the Latin origin of the word discipline is to teach. Discipline is about developing and creating appropriate behaviors in our students, not just managing the ones that they already have. It's about instilling values and positive attitudes and training children to work in the structure of rules and limits. Discipline creates habits. Habits make routines, and routines become who they are daily. And that goes for us as teachers, too. Discipline creates habits. Habits make routines, and routines are who you are daily. Because discipline deals with all aspects of behavior, discipline can produce higher attributes such as respect and responsibility and self-discipline. The younger ones especially, they haven't really had a lot of self-discipline. It could be even self-centered. And it's not just, there's a lot more to discipline than, oh, we just need to spank them, or we just need to give them a punishment because that's what they deserve. Sometimes just simply encouraging children to make good choices. And it's discipline is about preparing children for all the choices they'll be making and ensuring that they are ready to handle those choices. So first of all, discipline starts with us. Be disciplined yourself. So what does the Bible say about self-discipline? 2 Timothy 1:7 says, "For God hath not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind," or in other words, self-discipline. When we give our lives to God, the Holy Spirit gives us that power, and we have the help from God to do what we cannot accomplish on our own. And in Galatians, we are provided with a list of fruits, we all know, that we can exhibit towards our students. And the last one is self-control, and that's very close with self-discipline. And then when we have those fruits, we can say, "For with God, nothing shall be impossible." Second, self-discipline is a learning process. 2 Peter 1:3 says, "According to his divine power hath given unto us all things that pertain unto life and godliness, through the knowledge of him that hath called us to glory and virtue." And through our knowledge of knowing God and his word, we have everything we need as teachers to be successful. One more thing about self-discipline from Galatians 6:9, "And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not." So we need to tap into the power of God to push through in our teaching and to keep moving forward. Don't look back on what happened the day before. Just keep moving forward. And the opposite of self-discipline is someone who is disorderly, uncontrollable, unruly, and self-centered. And that's something we don't want to be as teachers. Because a person without self-discipline is like a city with broken down walls. It's like what happened in the Bible times when a city had no walls? People could come and go as they pleased. They didn't have guards or a city gate. Nobody kept watch. And nobody could determine who could enter or leave the city. A city without walls, they probably didn't have wise judges. The judges would sit there at the city gates and take care of the problems that might arise. It would help solve conflict. A city without walls would be chaotic, selfish, a scary place to live, and would eventually end up in ruin and decay. And if we ourselves lack self-discipline, we are like a city broken into and left without walls. We might be able to have control in our classrooms for a while, but eventually we become like the walls, ruinous and desolate. focused on ourselves and our own pleasures instead of what is best for our students. Sometimes it's not about us. We might take it personally about what a student has done, but it's not usually about us personally. It's just how they may be feeling and how it comes out. If we continue to let our guard down and our self-discipline crumbles, we, under the pressure of how we want our students to behave, if we are grounded in God's word, that is what will carry us through. So how do we keep ourselves from becoming a city broken into and left without walls? Well, practice self-discipline. It's not something, okay, I'm going to decide self-discipline today. I'm going to do this and this and this, and we'll be great for the rest of the year. No, it needs to be practiced daily. Another thing to do, spend time in prayer and studying God's word, which is profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, and for instruction in righteousness. Another one that was hard for me, especially, was to not compare myself to other teachers. Don't do that. I mean, I was even doing it yesterday, comparing myself to other speakers. And it didn't make me feel good. It didn't encourage me. And don't do that for yourselves. Don't put yourself in that position. Find something that is encouraging to you, whether it's a quote or a Bible verse. Have those in your mind and not looking at how others perceive you even. And so like judges in the city gates, we want to use the wisdom we find in God's word to govern our classrooms. Okay, next we'll look at what discipline needs to be. First and foremost, it needs to be clear and consistent. For example, if it is wrong one day for one student, it's wrong another day or for another student. It's not the severity of the punishment, it's the certainty that's important. The child needs to know for certain that this is going to happen if I do this. And it doesn't have to be harsh. It needs to be certain. Discipline needs to be developmentally and temperamentally appropriate for that child. We don't discipline first through third graders the same as we do ninth and tenth graders. Discipline needs to be self-enhancing, leading to self-discipline. We want the child to think about their action, and so that the next time they are tempted to do this, they might, oh, this is what will happen if I do this. And I'm being a little vague because not all children are the same, unfortunately, and not all disciplines will work for each child. Like those with fetal alcohol, there's some disciplines that just do not work for them. So you do need to find other forms of discipline. Be creative in that. Your discipline needs to be teaching social and life skills. For the children to know that the consequences from one actions, that each time they do misbehave, that there is a consequence for that action. And also discipline needs to be dealt with quickly, but not hastily. Sometimes you need time before, let's say it happens, and you're in the middle of teaching, for example, and you just say, we'll talk about this at recess. Maybe it could give you time to think about what you should do, to pray about it, and maybe even to calm down. It would depend on what it was. And the last thing discipline needs to be is to have logical consequences. You wouldn't, for example, you wouldn't remove a privilege from a student who made a mistake in science. Or you wouldn't give corporal punishment to a child that forgot to raise their hand. Or students are supposed to be working on a project together, and they're over talking about what they're going to do this afternoon after school. So I would just break them up, and you can work over here, and maybe you can work over here. That's a logical consequence for talking. So in other words, don't use a sledgehammer to kill a fly. It just doesn't work. So the next thing that a lot of, well, maybe I should, before I go to the next thing, a lot of my information, because I was like, what do I talk about? Discipline is discipline. Well, I got a lot of my information from this book, With All Due Respect, Keys for Building Effective School Discipline by Ronald G. Moorish. This is a very good book. There was even something in here that we were dealing with at home. Like, we figured it out. But if you, and I would have read this before, it's like, oh, let's try this. And it worked. So this and the Daredevil Discipline, that helped. And various other places. Even the Doc for Learning has a bunch of audio that you can listen to. Very helpful. So, well, the next thing I want to talk about is what I call power. We have the power as teachers, and power is the ability to get students to do what you want them to do. And there are six kinds of power we want to look at today, and the first one is called attractive power, which is the teacher's relationship with the students. And after teaching for so many years, it's like, oh, I probably could have had a better year if I would have, when I went to a community where I didn't know anybody. And I got there, and there was other circumstances, but if I would have just maybe came earlier, got to know the students without the role of being a teacher, that would have helped a lot. Students do what the teacher wants because they like the teacher and they want to please, and that's so true, first through third. They just want to please you. So find out more about your students, what they like, what they don't like. I even kept lists of things that, like, oh, yes, that's what, or I would just do the dismiss for lunch or at the end of the day, if your favorite color is blue, you may be dismissed. Or if you had eggs for breakfast. If your favorite food is spaghetti. And you find out things. I kept them in mind. I wrote them down because I tend to forget. The next power is expert power. And that is your teacher's knowledge. Students do what the teacher wants because of the teacher's enthusiasm and knowledge of that subject. So be sure to prepare. And this has to go with the classroom management. Prepare and organize your lessons. Establish a defining or unique characteristic to your teaching. That it doesn't have to be what Betty does or what Sam does. Find something that is unique to you. Like, it could be sharing hobbies or interests with your students. It could be your hobbies or your interests or your students' hobbies and interests. Use humor in teaching. Humor can diffuse the tension of in a potentially difficult situations even. It can make pupils aware, involved, and attentive. One way I used humor, not really necessarily in my teaching, but in the first younger grades, they tend to get hurt a lot. And some, they like to wail. And one way to help with that is humor. You know, just find something that they think is funny, and they'll start laughing, and they forget about how loudly they are wailing. Or have a saying of the day, or problem of the week. These get the children to thinking. Or challenge students to learn a variety of information, such as things that they're interested in, maybe not what you're learning about in science or math, but things that they are interested in, and have them have that ready for them. Oh, I know you're interested in horses. Here's a picture that I found. Another power is reward power. And this is from the teacher's ability to dispense a reward. I'm thinking more of approval and encouragement. And I didn't think about, a lot of people say praise. Well, this is more encouragement. And the difference between that is praise is the expression of approval and admiration, and encouragement is the action of giving someone support, confidence, and hope. Way better than praise. Students do what the teacher wants to receive that reward from the teacher. So make absolutely certain that your rewards match the values which you are trying to instill in them. So use rewards to support your discipline, not replace it. And that's not having to do with if you all continue to get better in flashcards, we'll all get a reward at the end. That's a little different. A teacher also has coercive power, and that is the teacher's ability to punish. students do what the teacher wants to avoid punishment. And this helps promote a sense of security for the students, for those students who are not inclined to misbehave. They know, those students know that those students that do misbehave, that the teacher will do something about it. Then you have legitimate power. And this is the student's belief that the teacher has the right to decide what is right in the classroom. Students do what the teacher wants to follow the authority of the teacher. So establish structure in your classroom. Students need structure because students feel secure when they know what to, they can expect from you as a teacher. The students thrive on consistency and structure, and it makes them feel safe. And in safety, there's security. And even though they might think you are firm, you could still be fun. I've had students, since I've taught for so long, that they might graduate and they say, oh, I want to thank such and such a person, myself. They remember me for my art projects or some fun things that we did. And lastly, there's personal power. It is the teacher's ability to use effective body language while setting limits. Oh, it might be a stern look. Sometimes that's all it takes for some of those students, and sometimes you can even get a student to cry just because of a stern look. Just all depends on the student and how sensitive they are. A shake of the head or a finger by your mouth to show them to be quiet. Classroom discipline is the business of enforcing classroom standards and building patterns of cooperation to minimize disruptions and maximize learning. It's to minimize disruptions so that you can maximize learning. And there are many kinds of discipline, and it's up to you to choose what is right for each student. But the first one I want to start with, and you should practice in weeks, first weeks of school, and that's to prepare. It's a preventative discipline. And to prevent discipline, you need to prepare. Well, for one, it moves things along. It helps you feel confident. There's been times I had to wing it. Maybe there was a dentist appointment after school, then there was church that night. There wasn't a lot of time to prepare. Been there? Those of you who aren't first-year teachers, whatever it may be, if you didn't have that time. I didn't feel as confident in what I was going to present to the students. But when you are confident, then your students will feel more confident and secure, and they tend to behave better rather than acting out. So decide in advance, while you're preparing, how you want your students to behave. And I found this in that book, an example of like a messy room. Look, you're looking at a messy room, maybe it's a family room, you had company, and it's a mess. And you need to clean it up, it's your job. Without even thinking about it, you know what that room looks like clean. So I'm going to pick up this, I'm going to clean up that mess, and that goes over there, till eventually you have a clean room. And that's how it is with having your students obey. It's your job to know how you want them to do it, what you're going to do at the time that you're going to do it. So that's where you'll establish proper policies and procedures. That doesn't really have to do with, it's not a discipline in itself, but it's a preventive discipline. Post-classroom rules. You don't need a whole wall full of rules. Somewhere I had found it. It was just a cute little thing, and they're general, very general, and nice. But it seemed like every disruption or misbehavior would fit under each one of those, kind of like what Susan had yesterday. It was a little different, and I couldn't find it, but it doesn't have to list, okay, for kicking, we don't kick our neighbor, we don't try to trip anybody. I don't think you need all that. Students know how to behave, and they know what to expect from you if you tell them. So just short general rules or specific rules. The next one would be keep frequently used supplies readily accessible so that you don't have to go out of the classroom. Now, that doesn't always happen. Sometimes I've forgotten something I needed for a class. Need to go get it. Where are your students? By themselves. And students, especially that teacher's gone, let's take advantage of it. So discipline requires supervision, which is a proactive process used to ensure students don't misbehave. And I would so much rather them not misbehave and then have to take care of something I could have prevented. Another thing you can do is use desk management to manage their behaviors. And I think of it like chess. That's not my favorite game, but each of the pieces has their starting positions. Everyone knows where they are. And you move pieces to gain advantage in the game, whether it's to win. And it's the same way as your classroom. Your seating arrangement, use your seating arrangements to gain advantage in your classroom. If Susie and Bobby don't get along, put them catty corner. Or if a student is taller, I've had that even, and they can see over the other person's shoulder, don't put them so close behind someone that's really short so they can see, and give them the opportunity. Maybe they wouldn't take the opportunity, but you don't want to even give a student an opportunity to cheat, because that's setting them up for failure. Minimize distractions or your movement. You want to move as a teacher, but you don't want 3 or 4 students walking around the room while you are teaching at the same time. So keep directions clear so students know what they are to be doing at different times. And if they are not in class, because sometimes if you have a multi-grade classroom, you need to have what they call sponge activities, activities that will soak up the spare time, whether they be something fun like puzzles, mazes, reading a book, or just an extra activity paper that you've given them to do. And avoid arguments. Quickly bring resolutions to those little petty things that students bring. I had a student that loved to come to school after they were say something from the day before. My mom says, and whatever it may be, whether it's how I pronounced a word or how I told them how to do something, my mom says, and it was every day almost. So it's like, how do I fix this? It's annoying, for one. And for two, it's not really a good thing to, pick it. For you want to pick at even what the parent says. And so I was like, how do I get rid of this? And so I talked to my sister. And so we came up with something, so went back to school the next day. And sure enough, my mom says. And I didn't say anything, and I said, so what does your dad say? It's quiet. And that happened a couple times, and then it kind of quit. I didn't hear that anymore. So sometimes just in the little things, and having time to think about it, because I didn't know what to do about it. It's like, it just wasn't a good thing. So it's like, okay, how do I get rid of that? And I did. And another discipline, besides preventive discipline, is supportive discipline. And that's something a teacher can do while teaching to support the student's ability to behave properly. You can still discipline while you're teaching. Effective teachers use their body language. Like I said, sometimes it's just your eyes or your facial expression to get that child back on task and maybe even stop a behavior or even stop it before it happens. And being calm. When you show your frustration, upset, when you show those emotions to your students, it causes them to be frustrated, upset. So be calm. Calm is strength, and being upset is weakness. Know what's going on in all parts of your classroom. If I was going to teach a classroom up here, it would be hard. I would find it hard to know what's going on over there, because I want to tune all of you out. I want to pay attention to these students, because I find it hard if you would all be watching me. Now, in my classroom, I don't want to have my back to the other students. I would be over here either standing to look at them or sitting down to be on their level. And that way I can keep my eye on if there's others that are working quietly in other parts of the room. And you can use overlapping. And that's kind of what I described it. You're doing two things at once. You're teaching a class, but you're paying attention to those students that are elsewhere. And when students know that you are aware of them, they're going to think twice before they do something. The behavior problems will diminish. And you can also use in your teaching variety. Change activities frequently, especially for the lower grades. You don't want to spend an hour teaching reading or math. Break it up. Make it interesting. Once I found out about there's holidays that are every day, I used it every year. And I didn't do a holiday every day, but if I could incorporate into my teaching or in how something I did that day, I did. Like there was punctuation day, and well, for example, today is National Chocolate Chip Day. I bring chocolate chips to school. Children enjoy chocolate chips. They're not going to say no to that. You can use it in counting. You can use it in if they make set up sentences, that can be the period or dot the I if they do. Just to give them the chocolate chips and have them use them throughout the day. And if when they eat them, they're gone. You know, they enjoy those little things. It's chocolate chips, that's not something that's going to break the bank. Another thing you can do while teaching is what this book calls speeding. And you can apply it to you more than apply it, at least this example. Let's say this would go really closely to, let's say a student is running in the hallway. Instead of say 5 minutes at recess you're going to stay in, have them go back and repeat that. And it works with other such examples also. So this speeding, it says that, let's say you're driving to a meeting in another city. Halfway through, you see flashing lights behind you because you were speeding. You wanted to get there. And you'll say, oh, I hope this doesn't take long. I don't want to be late. So the officer comes to your door and you were speeding. Now you need to go all the way back home and do your trip over again. I'm going to put a monitoring device on your car to make sure that you do exactly what I'm telling you to do. If this happened to you, would you slow down? You bet you would. And so they just give you a speeding ticket. And most people are like, oh, it's just a ticket. They go right back to speeding. Because I know multiple people that have gotten speeding tickets, and it doesn't affect them. Go back and do it over. And they quickly learn to watch for the supervision of the teacher, so they slow down and don't do the misbehavior again, or maybe it's a while before they even do it. Another discipline is corrective discipline. And this is the one we all think about. It's the consequences we apply to the student's misbehavior. And I do not have all the answers. I wish I did. But first of all, deal quickly with petty behaviors, those little things. As a teacher, it's easy to think, oh, it's just a small thing, not a big deal. I'm going to let it go. Your students catch on when you let it go. Small things become big things very quickly. And you set a precedent on how you will deal with behaviors. And your students, if your student is doing something small, but is big enough to capture your attention, quickly extinguish it before it becomes a big issue. You're not doing that to be picky. And some people might look on you as that, but you're setting your foundation for the compliance of big issues, big behaviors. Also, don't ignore behavior, because behavior you ignore is behavior you accept. Behavior you ignore is behavior you accept. And we had the issue of a child sticking out their tongue, and it was always when the adult was not looking. How did we deal with it? Well, we tried many different things. And this book clearly says for something like that, what works is to ignore it. And that's what we, well, before I got the book, but we ignored it and it went away. Like, oh, okay, well, we tried all those other things, but if we wouldn't have known before, if we just ignore that behavior, it goes away. That's the inappropriate attention seeking out there. But if you ignore things like defiance, aggression, bullying, those things escalate quickly and you will lose control of your classroom. And one big thing when you discipline with love. Those two, love and discipline, you can't have one without the other in it to be effective. So show Christ love in your discipline in whatever form of punishment you choose. Forms of punishment, they might be okay, but I was not comfortable doing, and so I didn't do those. Some corrective discipline may be verbal warning. Sometimes it's just that's all it takes. Could be a timeout, like we talked about yesterday, a loss of a privilege. Maybe it's they were playing with scissors inappropriate, flinging them around. That could be dangerous. Well, just take them away. Maybe moving their desk closer to you. Know that you're right there. Or in an out-of-way place away from the others until they can come back. Or move the desk away from another student. Another thing you can do for corrective discipline is to call their parents. You learn really quickly those parents that you can rely on. And very often we tend to underutilize our parents. How many of you like to call parents because of a misbehavior? I didn't. But don't wait until it's too late, because parents, they will respect you for communicating with them. And that helps with other areas in schoolwork. If you have the parents, they know what's going on, they are informed, then you can work together in whatever situation you might be working through. You could send them to the principal if you have one. They are there to support you, because you need support. And last one would be corporal punishment. I mean, there's more, way more you can include in that, but it's up to you as the teacher what you want to do. And with that, unfortunately, there are also wrong ways to discipline. These undermine your authority as the teacher. A few of them I listed here is shaming. You don't want to shame a student. One example of that is maybe a student chews on their pencil. The teacher might bring a teether for them to chew on. That's shaming. Tying a student to a seat. Maybe it's for poor posture, slouching. I even heard someone, they stuck a yardstick or a ruler down their back. I would have never thought of that, but I guess our teachers are creative that way too, even. Don't respond in anger or with a bad attitude. And that's where is deal with it quickly, but not hastily. If you need to calm down, take that time. Don't, because when you deal hastily with it, you will regret most likely what you've done. And that will eliminate that. Punishing without knowing the whole situation. That can be a tricky one. Maybe it looked like they were fighting and they weren't. Or maybe it looked like they were cheating and that wasn't the case. So make sure you get to the root or bottom of what actually happened. Make sure you know before you do your punishment. Some teachers might pinch, squeeze the arm. I actually had another teacher tell me, squeeze their arm, they'll get the message. And I'm like, okay. Or use a ruler. Some of those, that's up to you how you use whatever discipline. Something else that would be wrong is using a discipline that causes bitterness in the child. I have talked with other parents, teachers, that they still have bitterness today because of something that a teacher would have done when they were a child or how they were treated as a child. So be careful. We don't want to cause bitterness in our students that lasts. Ask yourself, is this discipline doing what you intended to do? Or are you just disciplining for the sake of he deserves the punishment and so he's going to get it? So we want to make sure we're disciplining to see change, a change of heart, and most importantly. And something else that can be something we shouldn't do is a punishment that is too mild. You don't want to be too hard, and you don't want to be too mild either, because if that punishment did not change the child's heart, your discipline is not effective. Your ultimate goal is to change the child's heart. So remember, students need to obey the voice of the teacher. The thing that makes discipline work for you is you, not all these things I've listed. It's you as the teacher. And ultimately, our goal in discipline is to bring about a change of heart, to bring restoration to the classroom, and peace in our classrooms, so we can minimize the distractions and maximize learning. So I wish you all the best as you prepare for this year and using wisdom in your classrooms. God bless you. If any of you have questions, I'll be happy to answer. I don't know if I'll have all the answers. And that's why I thought having a classroom setting like this, if you have a round circle and everybody share, that would be even a good thing, because sometimes you as a teacher don't even get, because your students are all different. If you can get ideas from others and advice from other people, that works just as well too. Thank you.